Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this state, Tuesday, January 14th, 2020. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Retirement of Judge Heidi Ladd, that's L-A-D-D, Labor of Love, All I Wanted to Do. Her goal during long run on the bench was to make things right. This article is written by Mary Shank and is based out of Urbana. For 38 years, Heidi Ladd has been driving herself to the same place to work every day. Come July 1st, the woman whose only professional desire was to level the playing field for victims is hanging up her judicial robe. I've just reached a point in my life where it's time to put family first. I haven't always done that, or it's been difficult to do that, said Heidi, age 63. I'm rebalancing work and life. Ladd will be about 2 months shy of 21 years as a judge when she retires. She was appointed an associate judge in August 1999, and in 2004, after winning a three-way Republican primary election for a resident circuit judgeship, she was appointed to that position and has been retained by voters every 6 years since. Prior to taking the bench, Ladd was a standout prosecutor in the Champaign County State's Attorney's Office, working 17 years for the same boss she has now, Tom DeFanis, who's been a judge only 4 years longer than Ladd. That her retirement is coming in the same year as that of DeFanis and fellow circuit judges Jeff Ford in Champaign County and Hugh Finson in Piatt County is accidental. It's just coincidence that our timing for individual reasons is right, said Ladd, the youngest of the four retiring jurists. Married to Rick Hulls, H-U-L-S, for the same amount of time she's been married to the law, 38 years, Ladd is ready to give him and their German shepherd, Tanner, a whole lot more of her attention. A match made at Kraft. Born in Vermont, Ladd's family moved all over as she grew up. Her father was a sales executive for Quaker Oats, and her mom stayed home to raise her and one older brother. Her father's work brought them to Illinois from New York. My parents wanted to get us in a good school district and scraped together everything so we could move to Glen Ellen. I'm very grateful, she said. When it came time for college, Ladd thought about applying her love of mathematics to engineering and was accepted at Purdue and MIT. Mom and Dad took one look at the tuition and said that pittance, what the schools offered for scholarships, is not going to come close, she said. She chose the University of Illinois, where she graduated with a degree in rhetoric in 1978. Merging her love of words and a desire to help others, Ladd applied to and was accepted at the U of I College of Law. To help pay for all that education, she began working at Kraft in West Champaign in early 1977. It was there that she met Hulls, a line mechanic who spent his whole career there before retiring more than a decade ago. Money was never an issue. In her third year of law school, Ladd began working at the state's attorney's office. She remembers her first trial, prosecuting a man for theft with a prior theft conviction, with supervision. Quickly proving her mettle, she was hired full-time in the spring of 1982, first as a traffic prosecutor. She moved on to juvenile abuse and neglect cases, then felony prosecutions, and along the way, she married that line mechanic. I took the bar, got married, and started at the state's attorney's office in a matter of a week or two, she said. She's hardly slowed down since. That's all I wanted to do, she said of her choice of criminal prosecution. Not exactly the most financially lucrative area. The money was never an issue. I had a passion for what I was doing. I wanted to do something that was meaningful. I just really loved the work. It's satisfying. You can't put a price on the thought that you've helped someone. That's what gave my life meaning. Fortunately, Rick was very supportive of that, she said. He was unwavering when I had to get up at 2 a.m. to go to a murder scene, and unwavering when I'm up at 2 a.m. working on reports, she said. A teacher at heart. In the early 1990s as a prosecutor, Ladd became enamored with the fledgling science of using DNA to identify criminals. I was the science nerd everyone would run from, she said, of her ability to comprehend, and then explain to juries the complicated, nascent science that is now widely accepted. There were a lot of hurdles to get through, a lot of nuances, she said, of the intersection between the science and the law. Along with professional scientists from the state crime lab, she taught other prosecutors around the country how to introduce it as evidence. I taught it in Minneapolis. I got to see the Mall of America, said the closet shopper, with a perennially chic wardrobe. She has also taught trial advocacy every fall since 1993 at her alma mater, a labor of love for her. It's how to handle litigation. The students are so enthused, and it really recharges my batteries to be able to engage with them. She's also taught for the Illinois Appellate Prosecutor's Office, giving experienced prosecutors pointers on how to make more effective opening statements and improve their skills at questioning and cross-examining witnesses. And she's taught other judges at judicial conferences and served as a mentor judge. You can right a wrong. As both a prosecutor and a judge, Ladd has handled some of Champaign County's most notorious and cruel criminals in her four decades of work. I can't put one over the other. For most of my professional life, I've had murders, sex offenses, child abuse. There were so many that were important to me, she said. What she'll miss most is the power to make things right. It's amazing. You can right a wrong. Try to correct an injustice. Give people the encouragement to change their lives. That I will miss. The ability to have a 5-minute ruling that can change someone's life for the better. She's also going to miss the children. As a prosecutor, she was an advocate for abused children. As a judge, she's been a positive influence on juvenile delinquents. It was a very difficult decision. I'll miss the kids, even though they drive me crazy with their decisions, she said. Travel, family time on deck. As the owners of property along the Salt Fork River in eastern Champaign County, Ladd and Holes love being outdoors. Like many retirees, she is anxious to travel, dig into house projects that have been put off, volunteer, watch the sporting events of her nieces and nephews before they turn pro, and just have time to even read a book. She also plans to continue teaching at the law school, where she was given a Distinguished Alumni Award last fall, and her service on the Illinois Supreme Court's Rules of Evidence Committee. She is grateful to Supreme Court Justice Rita Garman for appointing her to that in 2008. Illinois was one of 8 states that did not have rules. This group of judges and attorneys came together and fashioned this in 2 years. We still meet occasionally to make sure it's a working document. I just got reappointed to a 2-year term. I would like to finish it. That will be a way to continue to stay up on case law. Ladd said she called Garman to let her know of her plans, but will get the letters in the mail to her and all the other necessary players later this week. That will allow Garman to begin assembling a committee of citizens to evaluate candidates for appointment to Ladd's seat, the same process she will employ to fill Ford's seat. Given the timing of Ladd's announcement, it's too late for a candidate to run for election to her seat this year. DeFantis and Finson's seats will be filled by elections in the fall. Also up for election is the seat that now retired Judge Michael Jones left in 2018. It's currently held by Jason Baum, BOHM, who is running as a Republican for DeFantis' seat in all 6 counties of the circuit. And on the front page, there's a nice picture of Heidi Ladd, and under that is the caption, on Judge Heidi Ladd's long list of things to do in retirement, house projects. And there's a picture of her in her robe on the bench, and she has glasses and longish kind of auburn hair. Now, the next headline reads, Unit 4 School Board Meeting. Frustration on both sides of swap issue. Board sounds off on now scrapped idea. This article is written by Anthony Zillis and is based out of Champaign. Unit 4 school board members expressed exasperation at Monday's meeting, the first after a school swap between Garden Hills and International Prep Academy, or IPA, was proposed at December's board meeting, setting off an animated, critical discussion in the intervening month. NAACP of Champaign County President Minnie Pearson called the proposal racist. State Representative Carol Ammons compared it to the issues surrounding Brown v. Board of Education. Teachers expressed confusion and worry with a decision that they saw coming too quickly. The board members sounded off on Monday, and while several expressed frustration, their issues differed. Bruce Brown, who supported the swap, and Janina Baker, who vehemently opposed it, both directly addressed the issue. An entire community was mobilized on a series of untruths and conjecture, Brown said. The board was accused of being racist, but the definition of true racism is the protection of the status quo, which our community vehemently just fought to defend. This was an opportunity for radical change, fresh opportunities for both the staff and students at Garden Hills, but instead we're left with an emotional attachment to a building and a system that is utterly and incomprehensibly failing the students at Garden Hills. When I say system, I'm talking about the constant turnover, the inability to establish long-term leadership, class size in addition to the over-concentrations of trauma-impacted students. Brown said that assumptions that the students at the newer Garden Hills building would be moved to the current IPA building on Kirby Avenue before it's renovated as part of Unit 4's facility referendum were unfounded, and that he would have opposed any such quick move. Several Garden Hills teachers said they were led to believe during a meeting with Superintendent Susan Zola they would be moving in the fall of 2020, and the swap gone through, or had the swap gone through, a few years before the renovations are set to finish. Baker opposed the swap from the beginning. After listening sessions at both schools and widespread criticism from what Brown called the loudest voices in the room, the idea was scrapped. I think as I hear many of my fellow board members and I hear from people in the audience, I still stand by my statement that I don't think that the swap idea was in the best interest of the children I keep talking about, Baker said. I think there can be very little that convinced me to do that, and you can't entice me with a shiny rock, and I think the swap was that. Board President Amy Armstrong noted that the issues that faced IPA, where her children go to school, a few years ago, including having no PTA, and being in an undesirable, unsafe location, have changed or improved. I'm really hoping that with the revitalized conversation that we can see that happen at Garden Hills, she said. Several people spoke out against the idea of a school swap during public comments, and several complimented Zola on her willingness to scrap the idea after hearing from the public. Ideas and improvements that are already in place, and those that could happen going forward, were discussed, including changes to the school of choice model, but to Baker, it's not enough. Both she and Brown suggested in frustration that their time on the board may not be long. I want to thank people for their work, but it's not enough anymore, she said. I'm frustrated. I'm exhausted. I can't be the only one on this board who continues to hold people accountable. I can't keep doing that. Unless others are willing to go with me on this, I can't. And there's a picture of Janina Baker in the paper, discussing her objection to the proposed Garden Hills IPA school swap during Monday night's Champaign Unit 4 school board meeting. And there's a picture of her and a couple other women around a table talking into microphones and discussing their views. And now let's take a look at the weather forecast for the next week. This is provided to us by Greg Solier on the weather front. Runoff from earlier rain will continue to cause lowland flooding in the southern and eastern Corn Belt as water drains from creeks and streams to larger rivers. Starting Friday, precipitation will return across the Midwest, potentially aggravating the flood situation. Parts of the upper Midwest, as well as the Great Lakes and northeastern states, should expect late-week snow. Meanwhile, bitterly cold air will remain in place for much of the week across the interior Northwest and northern sections of the Rockies and Plains. Late in the week, frigid air will also engulf the upper Midwest. Pacific moisture overrunning the cold air will lead to wintry precipitation. Today's, it should be 48 degrees, breezy, unseasonably mild, considerable cloudiness, southwest wind 6 to 12 miles per hour, gusty. Overnight, mostly cloudy, southwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming southeast. Wednesday, the high is 50, the low is 22. Light snow or freezing drizzle for noon. Some light rain and spots in the afternoon. Still mild. South wind becoming westerly. Chance of precipitation is at 50%. Thursday, the high is 34. The low will be 22. It's partly cloudy. More seasonal. Friday, the high is 42. The low will be 26. Cloudy, windy, occasional rain, mixed snow, forenoon. Chance of precipitation is at 90%. Saturday, the high is or will be 38, the low will be 32 degrees. Windy and colder, cloudy, a couple of snow showers. Falling temperatures in the afternoon, chance of snow will be at 50%. And the next headline reads, Election 2020, Democratic debate, final chance to impress. Tonight in Iowa, where the race for 2020 will officially kick off with the state caucuses in 20 days, it's Democratic debate number 7, featuring a cast of just 6. With Cory Booker calling it a campaign on Monday, that's half of the field still officially in the running to be the party's pick to face Donald Trump on November 3rd. To set the stage, we asked back U of I political science professor Brian Gaines, G-A-I-N-E-S, who weighed in on the short-term goals of the entire field, starting with the frontrunners you'll see on CNN from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. tonight. First, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren continue to split the vote on the left, but cannot mutually gain from an indefinite truce. Amy Klobuchar lags well behind the top 4 in national and state polls. Unless she can finish surprisingly well in Iowa, as a Minnesotan, her backyard, she is likely done. She needs another good night and to draw voters away from Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg. Buttigieg has executed a shrewd but simple plan to focus on Iowa first, New Hampshire second. Ultimately, he hopes to squeeze out rival moderates, Andrew Yang, Klobuchar, but also to avoid the bad press that might follow from slumping in Nevada and South Carolina. He probably needs to chip away at Biden most of all, while also fending off Klobuchar. Biden, not having solidified his top dog status very well, probably gains from a biggish field of opponents. He should direct fire at whichever opponents the others are ignoring. Michael Bloomberg is even more dependent on a widely dispersed vote. By opting out of not only the official debates, but also the earliest state events in Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina, he risks irrelevance. His candidacy depends on 2 or 3 different candidates doing well somewhere by Super Tuesday, and in turn, on inconclusive debates without standout performers. Michael Bennett, John Delaney, Tulsi Gabbard, Deval Patrick, Tom Stewart, and Yang could each describe a scenario in which he or she wins, I'm sure, but these might be called or filed under fantasy rather than nonfiction. The next headline reads, She's the One, Honor Roll. Sharon Allen is the 32nd winner of an award that honors individuals who assist women in reaching their full leadership potential, demonstrate excellence, creativity, and initiative in their businesses or professions, and provide valuable service by devoting time and energy to improving the quality of life for others in the community. There's a picture of Sharon Allen talking to someone at a table, right in the center. It's a large photograph on the center of the front page of the paper. All these photos are taken by Robin Schultz of the News Gazette. Sterling Wealth Management, Inc., CEO and co-founder Sharon Allen laughs with Seth Elam at the company's offices in downtown Champaign. Allen on Monday was named the Athena Award winner by the Champaign County Chamber of Commerce and will be honored at a February 20th banquet, said nominator Susan Tolson. Her spirit of servant leadership with a foundation of high integrity while being a beacon of light to those she serves has created a successful and thoughtful business. And then there's a list of all of the past recipients of this Athena Award from 1989 all the way to 2020 on the front page of the paper. So congratulations to her. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. Now playing at our popular high school Twitter account, at NG Preps, 106 GIFs recorded during our Faces of the Winter event. We used the entertaining clips produced by managing editor Mike Goebel, distributed by Preps coordinator Colin Likas, and made possible by good-natured teens to spotlight the daily achievements of area student athletes. The kids really have taken to the idea and seem to have a ton of fun producing these, like I said. We're trying to find even more ways to make these kids feel like stars while they're in high school, and I think this is one of the coolest ways in which we've been able to accomplish that. We'll record many more during Faces of the Spring in late March. And there's a picture of several teenagers. It says, Go Oakwood! And there's a picture of three young ladies in basketball uniforms. Looks like Lakewood on the front of their jerseys, but I'm not sure. And they're kind of posing for their GIF recording. History. Area history. In 1920, Champaign Street Commission J.T. Boland's employees have been busy scooping the snow off Main Street, where it was piled when it was shoved off the sidewalks and the streetcar tracks. In 1970, Champaign Mayor Virgil Wyckoff and Urbana Mayor Charles Zipprot issued the following joint statement about the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King. We are aware of the fact that the late Dr. King's birthdate is of special significance to many members of our community. Dr. King's life has influenced many aspects of our lives today. We urge our citizens to mark Dr. King's birthday, January 15th, in their own fashion. In 2004, 7% tuition increases are likely for students at the Urbana campus of the University of Illinois, and a top administrator says the increase will fall far short of what's needed for faculty raises. With increases in student fees and housing costs, the price of attending the Urbana campus would exceed $15,000 for incoming freshmen in 2005-2006. Total costs will go up by 6% for most continuing students and 6.9% for new undergraduates. In international history, today's highlight, on January 14, 1994, President Bill Clinton and Russian President Boris Yeltsin signed an accord to stop aiming missiles at any nation. The leaders joined Ukrainian President Leonid Kravchuk in signing an accord to dismantle the nuclear arsenal of Ukraine. On this date, in 1784, the United States ratified the Treaty of Paris, ending the Revolutionary War. Britain followed suit in April of 1784. In 1914, Ford Motor Company greatly improved its assembly line operation by employing an endless chain to pull each chassis along at its Highland Park, Michigan plant. And in 1964, former First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy, in a brief televised address, thanked Americans for their condolences and messages of support following the assassination of her husband, President John F. Kennedy, nearly 2 months earlier. The next headline reads, from Capital News, Illinois, AG Chief out. Connection to Rape in Champaign. Email costs Sullivan. This article is written by Jerry Nowicki and is based out of Springfield. The state's agriculture director resigned at the request of Governor J.B. Pritzker for failing to disclose contents of a 2012 email that pointed to the possible cover-up of a rape in Champaign and government ghost workers, the governor's office said Monday. John Sullivan, a Democratic state senator from 2003 to 2017, who became ag director last year, knew about the July 2012 email contemporaneously, but did not disclose its contents to state investigators, Pritzker's office said. The email in question was uncovered in an open records request by WBEZ-FM radio station in Chicago last week. It was sent by Michael McLean, a former lobbyist for the public utility ComEd, and a close confidant of Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan, to two high-ranking members of then-Governor Pat Quinn's staff seeking leniency for a state employee facing disciplinary action. He has kept his mouth shut on Jones's ghost workers, the rape in Champaign, and other items. He is loyal to the administration, McLean said, of the employee in the email obtained by WBEZ. There were no other details regarding the possible cover-ups, and it is unclear who Jones is pertaining to to the ghost workers. Pritzker's office has forwarded the matter to the Office of the Executive Inspector General. The Illinois State Police and Office of the Attorney General are working with the Champaign County State's Attorney on the matter as well. Aid, Pritzker disturbed. Pritzker's office said he sought and accepted the resignation from Sullivan over the weekend when new information came to light. Director Sullivan had a long and productive public service career as a state senator, and the governor is grateful for his willingness to serve in the administration. Director Sullivan put together an outstanding team at the Department of Agriculture, and as a result, the department's work thrived, Pritzker Communications Director Emily Bittner wrote in the statement. However, the governor holds all state employees to the highest ethical standards, and the governor requested the director's resignation because he is disturbed that then-Senator Sullivan became aware of the existence of the July 31, 2012 email contemporaneously and did not handle it appropriately, including not alerting the Inspector General or other authorities. The employee referenced in McLean's 2012 email was Forrest Ashby of Quincy, who was a constituent of Sullivan's 47th Senate District at the time. McLean's home in Quincy was raided by FBI agents in May as part of a wide-ranging probe of several state House insiders. WBEZ reported Monday that Sullivan was contacted by Pritzker's general counsel about a document that mentioned his name that was sought by WBEZ in a pending open records request. Lines were busy when Capital News Illinois tried to contact Sullivan's residence Monday. In a statement first reported by WBEZ, however, the former ag director said the inquiry from Pritzker's general counsel led him to a review of my own personal emails from that same period of time. My search discovered a forwarded copy of McLean's July 31, 2012 email reported by WBEZ. I shared this information with Governor Pritzker's general counsel, he said in the statement. Unintentional oversight. Sullivan said summer 2012 was a stressful time as he was in the middle of a re-election campaign and preparing for cancer surgery in Baltimore. I was already well aware of McLean's efforts to keep me informed of his advocacy on behalf of Ashby, and I simply did not read the entire forwarded email, he said. Had I read the email thoroughly, my reaction would have been disgust, and I would have immediately notified proper authorities. Nevertheless, the email was in my inbox, and not reading the entire email led to my failure to immediately respond as I would have. Bottom line, I accept responsibility for what was truly an unintentional oversight and the subsequent inaction. Pritzker's office said the information relayed by Sullivan was forwarded to investigators. The governor's general counsel has shared all of the information she learned from Director Sullivan with the Office of the Executive Inspector General and offered to share this information with all law enforcement agencies looking into the situation. The administration will continue to assist in the ongoing investigation, Bittner wrote. Jeremy Flynn, who served as Sullivan's chief of staff, was appointed by Pritzker on Monday afternoon as his former boss's interim successor. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit news service operated by the Illinois Press Foundation. Its mission? To provide credible and unbiased coverage of state government to the more than 400 daily and weekly newspapers that are members of the Illinois Press Association. And on NewsGazette.com, inside Illini basketball with Scott Ritchie. On his midseason Illini MVP, Alan Griffin. I think MVP is different than MOP, most outstanding player, which would be Ayo Dosunmu. It's hard to argue that he does not have tremendous value to the team for his rebounding and his ability to make shots. For our entire menu, visit our website and click on Podcasts. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been the reading of Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, January 14th, 2020. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll be back shortly to read Part 2 of the News Gazette for today, so please stay with me. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.